Our next guest, country artist Jimmy Dale Gilmore, has a new CD with the band The Wronglers. It's titled Heirloom Music and features fresh versions of old-timey tunes dating back to the 30s and 40s. As a songwriter and singer, Jimmy Dale Gilmore is considered part of the alternative country music scene. He grew up in Lubbock, Texas, and his new CD is full of songs he'd heard and played most of his life. They're songs from an earlier era, associated with such country icons as Bill Monroe, Charlie Poole, and the Carter family. Terry spoke with Jimmy Dale Gilmore earlier this year, just before he and the Wronglers performed songs from Heirloom Music at the South by Southwest Music Festival in Austin, which Gilmore considers his adopted hometown. But before we hear their conversation, let's listen to the opening track from Heirloom Music, a song called Time Changes Everything.
Had our fun, but time changes everything. When you left me, my poor heart was broken. Our romance seemed all in vain. But the dark clouds are gone, and there's blue skies again. 'Cause time changes everything.
Jimmy Dale Gilmore, welcome back to Fresh Air. It's such a pleasure to have you back. I love the new record. Is there a story behind why you chose Time Changes Everything?
Well, it's funny, because we kind of were thinking in the realm of bluegrass with this record, although that's not exactly what it is, really. It's not the accurate description. That song had been a real favorite of mine from a lot of different directions, and I found a recording of it by Bill Monroe that I didn't even know about. I never had associated that's a Western swing. You know, it's a, I think Tommy Duncan wrote it.
From the Bob Wills band.
Yeah. The Bob Wills version was the one that I first knew, you know, as a kid. And then the one that I actually learned it from, though, was Johnny Cash.
Really?
There was a collection that, I think it was called Now There Was a Song. And it was my dad's favorite. Well, he had two favorite records. He had that one and a collection by Marty Robbins of same kind of thing, you know, cover songs, where they had done old cover songs. And Time Changes Everything, you know, I've heard it in many, many different versions. It's just always so funny because it's self-referential. When you hear, you know, you can change the words of an old tune.
So you said that bluegrass would not be an accurate description of this album, even though you kind of set out to make a bluegrass album. So what would an accurate description be?
Well, you know, we were calling it old-timey music, but that has kind of acquired a ring, you know, it still wasn't quite accurate. And Warren Hellman had said that somebody had referred to all of this sort of music as heirloom music. And I loved that phrase. There's something about that old-timey sort of, you know, there's something dismissive about it. And kind of part of our point in all this was that this music is old, but it's really good, really still pertinent.
Well, let's hear another song from the new album. And this is a Charlie Poole song, or at least I don't know if he wrote it, but his recording is certainly the first famous one. And the song's called Leaving Home. So tell us how you learned the song and what the song means to you.
Well, I very first heard it from the New Lost City Ramblers. And, well, I just fell in love with the song because it's just so peculiar and quirky. And as a result of hearing that, I went and looked further into it, and it caused me to discover some of that really older stuff, their source material. And the Charlie Poole one is still one of the strangest recordings. And I think my recording of it is somewhat true to the original. You know, this Frankie and Johnny theme, there was probably 100 different versions of Frankie and Johnny, and this is a different version, but it's so extremely different that it veered off into another world, I think.
So this is Jimmy Dale Gilmore and the Wronglers from their new album, Heirloom Music.
Well, Frankie said to her, Johnny, now your hour done come. 'Cause underneath her silk kimono she drew a 44 gun. These love affairs are hard to bear. Johnny, he fled down the stairway. My love, Frankie, don't shoot. Frankie done aimed that 44 and the gun went rooty toot toot. Johnny fell. Then Frankie yelled, I'm going away, I'm going to stay and never coming home. You're gonna miss me, honey, in the days to come. When the wind begins to blow, the ground is covered up. And when you think of the way you're gonna walk me back, your loving man, you're gonna miss me, honey, in the day they say to come.
So in talking about your musical past, the last time you were on the show, you performed songs that you learned through your father. Country songs, and he used to play in a country band, although he worked at a university where he was the director of a dairy lab. Do I have that right?
Yeah, the dairy industry department, they called it. It later on became the food technologies department.
Well, so he had two really different sides of his life, music and his academic career.
Right.
And while we're on the subject, you went to Texas Tech where he worked. You went there briefly. Is that the right word?
Yeah, right. Yeah, I went for a couple of years. And I studied a couple of things pretty intensively, but I never did get a degree. I made really good grades in philosophy and anthropology, but I was already beginning to spend too much time in the nightlife, the honky-tonks, and you know the bootleg joints and stuff.
Bootleg?
To be able to handle college.
Literally bootleg?
Oh, yeah. Lubbock was, until very recently, was dry. You know, and Lubbock's a fairly large town. I mean, it's not a village. It's close to a couple of 100,000 people. University town, but it was dry. So any of the nightlife, you know, that involved alcohol was illegal. As a matter of fact, Joe Ely and I got to be friends because we met each other because we both played at some of these places that were, not only was it illegal for us to be there at the age we were, actually there were no age restrictions because the entire thing was illegal.
Right.
So that was part of the backdrop. And then I had a group of friends that were I sort of lived in these two different worlds at the time. I had a lot of like intellectual and creative, you know, music and artists and writers and, you know, kind of university sort of people. And then I had this other group of friends because of that music nightlife stuff that were professional gamblers. and I hung out with them a lot, and that's where I never could play cards or anything. I was terrible. But I played music. I just hung around with these guys and played music, and I took requests from them. That's how I grew a lot of my repertoire, a lot of songs that I knew a little bit. These guys would want me to sing them, and so I'd learn them. That's how I ended up knowing so many Hank Williams songs and, you know, Johnny Cash, that sort of stuff.
Would you describe one of the bootleg joints that you played in?
Well, they were really, basically, they were just little dark bars, sort of like a cross between a bar and a coffee house. And the only thing is that at any time it might be raided.
Were you ever raided?
You know, I never did happen to be there when one of the raids happened. And, of course, later on, you know, that world sort of blended real easily into the drug world when that happened, you know.
I was just thinking about that. Like, you're playing at these bootleg joints, right, probably right on the verge of the era when a lot of young people were not only smoking marijuana but doing psychedelic drugs.
That's exactly,
yeah.
That's exactly what happened. There came to be this convergence of these groups of people. You know, the the intellectual crowd I was talking about that also, you know, were music lovers and not live people, some of them.
So you must have felt like you were in two completely different worlds at the same time.
I did. I always had a schizophrenic feeling about my social position. I talked about that on After a While. That was my first actual major label record. I talked about having an epiphany one time when I read a phrase by Ezra Pound, because I was so much into country music, and most of my friends weren't. They really only liked rock and roll at the time, or, you know, top 40 kind of stuff. But I read this thing by Ezra Pound where he said, the poem fails when it strays too far from the song, and the song fails when it strays too far from the dance. And I loved that. I loved that so much. And for some reason, that had the effect of, like, bringing my two worlds together in my own head. You know, that honky-tonk music was dance music. It was almost like that, like Ezra Pound giving the intellectuals endorsement to this, you know, this lowbrow kind of music.
So I have a suggestion for your next record, and I'm sure you'll want to do it since I suggested it. You want to know what it is?
All right.
You ready?
Sure.
Okay, so it's an album of cowboy songs. And I'm suggesting.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because I love that stuff. And I'm suggesting it in part because I hear this affinity, this connection between your voice and Gene Autry's voice. Do you like Gene Autry?
Oh, yes. As a matter of fact, you know, there's an interesting link between us. My great aunt, I never did know her, but my dad's aunt, actually, she was from Tioga, Texas. They always called it Tioga. And I remember that because it came up in a conversation I had with Colonel Tom Parker one time, who I didn't realize had been Gene Autry's manager.
This is the guy who was Elvis's manager.
Yes, yes. Colonel Tom Parker had his history was even more amazing than most people know about. And he remembered that Gene Autry was from Tioga, Texas. You know, it's like my relatives, you know, the East Texas kind of people. You know, it's like they say Noe instead of Noah. Anyway, my aunt actually sort of helped raise Gene Autry.
No.
Yeah. He apparently, her son, who would have been my dad's cousin, who also I don't know, I never have met, but apparently they were best friends, and Gene Autry lived with them a lot. I think he was, I don't really know the details of the background to all of it, you know, but he was, apparently he was closer to their family than he was to his own. And my dad said that my aunt told him one time that she played Gene Autry, his first Jimmy Rogers records.
Wow, because his early songs were really influenced by Jimmy Rogers.
Yes, and in the early days, he was an outright imitator of Jimmy Rogers.
And he yodeled.
He sounded just exactly like him.
Wow. So did you grow up hearing Gene Autry records because of this family connection?
Well, I didn't know the family connection until many, many years later. That was just a little story that came up somewhere around the supper table one time, long time later.
So, but did you hear his records?
I loved Gene Autry when I was a little kid. I had, you know, I had that little, red vinyl record of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, and the flip side was Frosty the Snowman by Gene Autry.
Mm-hmm.
And that was way, and I was in the first grade, I think. And I really loved Gene Autry, although later on, you know, I kind of veered more towards the blues and the honky-tonk music was more appealing to me than that sort of movie cowboy music.
Well, Jimmy Dale Gilmore, it's been great to talk with you, and I really want to thank you a lot.
Well, thank you, Terry, and it's so much fun to get to actually talk with you instead of just listen to you, because I hear you just about every day.
Oh, that's so great. I'm so glad you listen.
Jimmy Dale Gilmore speaking to Terry Gross earlier this year. His new CD with the Wronglers, Heirloom Music, has just been released.